well. After one very late episode, I'm finally getting back on track with the fortnightly Sunday uploads. Welcome to episode 8 of Sailing Infidels, On the Outside Looking In, Re-entry. This is the continuing tale of the Sailing Infidels COVID-19 experience and how it evolved from a pleasant self-imposed isolation through a virtually inescapable involuntary confinement to a near lockout, as opposed to a lockdown. The end of winter. The storm that we had ridden out at Long Point Cove would be the last serious storm of the season for us, and in retrospect, it also marked an abrupt change of season. It blew all night that night, and finally at daybreak, the wind diminished and veered as predicted. Later, the clouds parted, and the patches of blue sky quickly grew larger throughout the day. We spent the entire day resting up as best we could, while still rocking and rolling in the leftover choppy seas that came in from Fisher Channel, while we prepared to head further south. The next morning was amazingly calm in Fisher Channel. In fact, it was hard to believe it was the same place as it was two nights prior. After all we'd been through over the past several months, the calm, serenity, and warmth of springtime sunshine were such a welcome relief. Throughout the winter, we had been subjected to non-stop cold, denied sustenance and fuel, and pummeled by hurricane-force winds that ultimately forced us out of our home. On top of all that, the past several weeks gave us more cold, a lot of snow, and then storm after storm. Since leaving Prince Rupert, we had been doing little else but dodging storms and hunting for firewood. We left the anchorage just after 10 a.m. and motored the whole way down to Safety Cove. A westerly wind came in from Hecate Strait as we motored past Hakai Passage, so we rolled out the Yankee to turbocharge the Garth Monster as we passed. Once the positive wind effect petered out, though, the ebbing tide, which had been trying hard to suck us into Hakai Passage, became more pronounced without the aid of the Yankee sail. It didn't last long, though. Once we were far enough away from Hakai, the ebb tide turned to our favor as it flowed towards the end of Fisher Channel at the south end of Calvert Island. We arrived and anchored in Safety Cove at supper time in about 60 feet of water and enjoyed another nice, calm evening with sunshine warming the cockpit. Another still morning was upon us as we weighed anchor with only the faintest of an eastern glow behind the coastal mountains of BC, with just enough light to pick our way through the driftwood that had sought refuge alongside us in the cove, we were soon southbound toward Cape Caution. As we motored down the last of Fisher Channel with 5 to 8 knots of apparent wind on our stern, we raised the main, furled out the Yankee, and stayed the course with the Garth Monster, providing the lion's share of the power. A northbound tug with a barge loaded with containers passed by about a mile to starboard, and I remember thinking that the sails were just full enough that at least we looked good from a distance. As we left Fisher Channel, the tidal flow changed to a flood, and a northwesterly swell ran behind us, pushing us along. It probably provided more assistance than the sails at that point. I watched in the distance as Cape Caution grew larger on the coastline, and by lunchtime, Cape Caution was behind us, and the wind finally started to pick up. I had timed our departure from Safety Cove to take advantage of the last of the ebbing tides of the morning, and then the flood tide as we entered Queen Charlotte Strait. Thanks to Garth, we were right on schedule for the slack tide to transit Browning Passage between Balaclava and Nigai Islands. We dropped the mainsail just before entering Browning and had a solid 12 to 14 knots of wind directly on the stern for our entrance. We were about halfway through when it died out, so I rolled up the Yankee and continued on through under diesel power. When we came around Hussar Point and facing to the northwest, we found the wind again, up to 25 knots right on the bow. We powered through it, into Port Alexander, and proceeded to anchor. I picked our spot and dropped a mark on the chart plotter for Wendy to slow up to, and went to the bow to untie the anchor securing line. I secured the anchor in place on the forward roller with a line tied to the bowsprit, and though I had released that line, I had forgotten about the excess, which I had tied loosely to the top of the bowsprit to keep it from dragging in the water when underway. I proceeded to lower the anchor, and I did so without noticing that it was still tied to the bowsprit. Once I believed the anchor to be on the seabed, I signaled to Wendy to reverse, which she did. Then, when she tried to shift the gearbox into neutral in order to straighten our course, it would not come out of gear. I rushed back to the cockpit and killed the engine. Then Wendy wiggled the shift lever a little, and it came out of gear, so we resumed anchoring. I stayed at the helm and resumed backing. Wendy went to the bow, so she could tell me when we hit the end of the anchor road. Standing on the bowsprit, peering down into the water, she saw that the anchor was suspended a couple of meters below the surface. She came back to let me know, and when she arrived at the cockpit, she found me struggling to get the gearbox out of gear. Once we finally got the anchor on the seabed and were actually anchored, I started trying to figure out what the problem was with the transmission. I still don't know, but I know I can safely assume that parts would have been required and unavailable due to the age of the equipment. It has been discontinued for a long, long time. We did, however, figure out that the way to get it out of reverse when it stuck really bad was to hit the shift tower on the top of the transmission with a hammer. We had never had this particular issue before, but years earlier I had bought a used gearbox for the inevitable failure of the original and had even installed it and tested it at one point. I knew it was good, but it had a rear seal leak that I had yet to address. Anchoring in Port McNeil the next day was uneventful, though we found that although the marina was open, shower season wasn't going to start for another 2 weeks. The showers were closed until May 1st. With that disappointment, we headed to the grocery store and then to the beer and wine store for our favorite beer. Disappointed again, we made do with some beer that we could tolerate. I was unable to find a seal for that spare gearbox, but I did get a part number for a generic seal that would fit. Our next stop was Port Neville. It was a beautiful day with a light northwesterly in the forecast. We motored from Port McNeil down to Johnstone Strait and put up some sail with a little wind just after the beam. We hoisted the Yankee, staysail, mainsail combo, and then we hauled out the Jenniker that we'd never flown before and worked on getting it rigged up and ready. By the time we had it ready, the wind was picking up and was sufficiently strong that we left the Jenniker bagged. Later in the day, we tied up at the free dock at Port Neville for a good night's sleep. We were off that dock around 0800 the next morning. I knew we'd be a little early for tide change at Race Passage, but figured that a little fight against the current would be worth it in order to get to Seymour Narrows on time for slack water. Boy, was I wrong! The current in Race Passage had us at a near standstill and made us so late for slack water at Seymour Narrows that we actually went through at maximum flood. The end result was really kind of fun, though. We hit 16.2 knots speed over ground. In nearly 10 years of owning the boat, we'd never seen anything over 9 knots. Throughout the quick transit of the rapids, Wendy the Wonder Woman was at the barbecue, grilling up another fine meal. We'd been through those rapids several times in the past, but never at that speed. On the south side of Ripple Rock, there were two massive whirlpools. One was close to Maud Island and the other directly in front of us as we came out of the Narrows. They both looked absolutely evil, but there was plenty of room between them to navigate through. We had never seen Ripple Rock at full flood before. It's pretty impressive. A cosmic waltz. I called an auto parts store in Campbell River first thing in the morning, and they ordered a new lip seal for the transmission to arrive the next afternoon. The following morning, we decided to move cosmic debris over to Campbell River and grab a slip for the weekend. After lunch, we motored over to the marina. As we turned into the marina, a small powerboat folded in behind us and followed us towards our dock. We had planned to stop at the fuel dock first, but it was full. To wait would have meant treading water against the breeze and tidal flow and shifting into and out of forward and reverse gears for who knows how long. Not a good idea, considering the circumstances. As we approached the fairway leading to our dock, I turned to port, shifted cosmic debris into neutral, and allowed her to slow as we made our turn. But when the wind came on to our port bow, it began to blow us out of our turn, pushing our bow toward a large motor yacht. I shifted the lever back into forward, but the transmission did not engage. Then as we continued to slow, the bow was blown more to starboard, aiming us right at the yacht. I yelled to Wendy to be ready to fend off as I shifted into reverse, and then the gearbox engaged. I looked back at the trailing boat, who by this time was likely wondering just what the hell this jackass was doing, me being the jackass. I managed to avoid having the bow hit the yacht by reversing hard. Between our prop walk, the tidal current, and the breeze, we were backing away in a 180-degree turn and heading directly for the rocky breakwater. I backed the throttle off and tried to shift into neutral, but could not. It was stuck again. I yelled for Wendy to take the helm and then killed Garth. As we drifted toward the breakwater, she climbed in and started fiddling with the shifter, while I rushed for the engine room and grabbed a hammer. A quick, sharp rap on the top of the shift tower, while Wendy moved the shift lever, got her back into neutral. Meanwhile, the ebbing tide and southerly breeze had conspired to bring us to a stop. The small powerboat went by as I restarted Garth and moved the shifter back into the forward position. Nothing happened. It seemed we no longer had a forward gear. By this time, we had turned a further 360 degrees and were once again facing in the right direction and were slowly drifting back toward the big yacht. But at least the elements were being kind to us. Wendy asked the occupant of the yacht if he could lend a hand. He advised us to put up a sail and sail to a dock downwind of him. Fairly well exasperated by that time, I called the marina on the radio and asked for assistance, but they were unable to help. I was grateful for the abnormally wide fairways, and with the boat finally sitting reasonably still in the water, we were no longer in any danger of hitting anything, at least not for the time being. I continued fiddling with the shift lever, hoping to catch the forward gear. Finally, I had all but given up and was focused more on finding an alternate way onto the dock when very subtly I heard Garth's RPMs drop as he took on a load. Forward gear had finally decided to engage and we slowly began to move. We idled around the big motor yacht and coasted up to the dock just ahead of it. Saturday morning we were up early, coffeeed up, and after slamming back some breakfast, we got busy. My seal was expected that afternoon, so we spent the morning cleaning up and doing laundry. After lunch, we hit the grocery store, beer store, chandlery, and then I hot-footed it over to the parts store to find that they had ordered the wrong seal. We used the delay and sunny weather wisely and lifted Shantae up so that Wendy could swab the deck while I did some plumbing work below decks. First thing Monday morning, even before coffee, I called the other local auto parts store. What a difference in attitude from the first place. The guy was friendly and took the time to make sure he had all the numbers right. He had to do some searching around, but called back promptly to say that he had found one and might be able to get it there by the next day. Just out of curiosity, after ordering from him, I called the local Volvo Penta dealer to see if they would have one in stock, and if so, how many zeros would precede the decimal on the price tag. I had a quote of $18 for the one I just ordered. Unsurprisingly, Volvo couldn't find the seal. Astonishingly, the service counter had no knowledge or record of that model of their own Volvo gearbox. We had heard the news that BC was announcing some fairly serious travel restrictions in response to the growing COVID crisis. What the hell had we gotten ourselves into? In a few days' time, it sounded like we were no longer going to be able to travel outside of our health authority region. So what exactly happens when your health authority region has been defined by a mailing address for the past 5 years, and you're nowhere near it, nor can you physically get your boat to it? It was on the mainland, 6 hours from the coast. Well, we came up with a solution. To be on the safe side, we rented a mailbox and simply changed the addresses on our driver's licenses to the street address of the post office. The health authority region was large enough that we wouldn't have to worry about travel restrictions for a while. The seal gods were smiling upon us that day too. It arrived, and it was even the right one. I had the new seal installed in the spare gearbox in about 10 minutes after arriving back at the boat and then tore into removing the bad tranny. Just before 10 p.m., I flashed up the Garth Monster, reset the throttle settings, and then tested the gearbox. The response from the shifter into and out of both forward and reverse was very positive. Coming out of both gears into neutral was smooth and normal as well. This was a definite win. We cracked a celebratory beer, which led to a post-celebratory beer, and then went to bed. Yeah, we're getting old. With the cheer of the fans still ringing in my ears after the victory of the previous evening, I woke at 06:15 to lean forward and turn the inverter on to start the coffee maker. Checkout time was 11 o'clock and we still had a lot of cleaning up and stowing to do before heading over to the fuel dock. All indications were for a triumphant emergence from the marina and a fantastic sail over to Gorge Harbor on Cortez Island. 3 quick cups of coffee along with breakfast and we were in full swing for our departure. Wendy was already busy topping up the fresh water tanks and nearly finished when I made my way to the engine room door. I opened the door to do the prerequisite fluids check to see an abrupt cancellation of the day's plans. With paper towel in hand, I opened the forward engine room door and turned on the light. As I reached down for the dipstick, I did a quick scan of the ER. Much to my surprise, there was water swirling up from the bilge and starting to pour into the engine catch pan. "I think we have a little problem here," I said. Wendy was in the cockpit and looked down into the galley. From that vantage point, she could see through the finger hole in the floorboard access panel to the center water tank, and that the tank was completely submerged in water. The transmission change the day before had necessitated draining the oil from Garth, and to safeguard against an overboard oil spill, I had turned off the bilge pumps and had forgotten to turn the switches back on when I was done. I came forward and opened the floorboards. The first one was full to the brim. Forward to the next one, full to the brim. Next, full. Next, full and still rising. Were we sinking? Join us in the next episode for more excitement. We appreciate your support. You are the wind in our sails. New episodes are released every second Sunday evening. Explore our captivating blogs and thrilling videos and contribute to the project at www.sailinginfidels.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for updates, photos, and videos, and don't miss out. Stay connected and be part of the incredible journey.